So you have a podcast, and you really want to make money with it. Then you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. Check this out. We'll host your podcast for free. You just do your show. We'll use the power of Odyssey's massive expert sales team to place ads in your show and make you money. Does it get any easier than that? Nope. You stay in control of your show, and we help you bring in the money. Sounds like a dream partnership. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start earning more from your content today.
Neat or on the rocks? It's the Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950 The Fan, Rochester.
Danger and Battaglia back in the Sports Bar from vacation, and so much has happened over the course of the last few weeks. That's why we welcome in Steve Cornianos. He is the draft analyst, and the NHL draft is now in the rearview mirror. Free agency is underway in the NHL. And Steve, we wanted to get your take on the NHL draft as a whole, but also specifically on what the Buffalo Sabres did. I know that, you know, you can't really put a grade on a draft because the grade would probably be incomplete, but do you sense or see anything in the patterns of how the Sabres have drafted here 2 years now with Lindy Ruff in terms of what direction they might be going in with the prospects that they've drafted?
Clearly, I think Jerry Ford himself said that there's like a little bit of recency bias every year in the draft, and specifically in the Eastern Conference, you had Tampa winning three straight Eastern Conference titles, and then you have Florida now in three straight. So he said that size, toughness is a part of it. I think the Sabres definitely had the skill requirement met. If you look back at their drafts from, let's say, 2019 and 2021, et cetera, 2022. So I think that it make, usually teams, I'll get upset if they maybe just focus too much on size and try to address needs and not really taking home run swings. But the Sabres have taken plenty of home run swings in the past, regardless of size. I think the analytics department has quite a say in how they draft. So that's always going to help the smaller players. But this particular draft, and even last year as well, I think many of us predicted that the Sabres were going to, unless it was something like a Hellenius falling on onto their lap like last year, they were really going to focus on the defense and goaltending. And really, just kind of like what they did. They still didn't ignore skill completely. They saved that for the back end of this year's draft class. But in the early rounds, they really focused on what I consider to be, I think what many people consider to be not necessarily a need, but just kind of like a contingency, like let's balance out the left and the right side of the defense. Let's add a couple of goalies. I felt personally that it was a pretty decent goalie crop this year. So although we knew that the centers were going to be prevalent in terms of the first half of the first round, I think the Sabres made the right call with what they did over the weekend in Los Angeles.
Yeah, the Sabres taking two goalies, one winger, three centers, three defensemen, the top two picks in their draft. Let's start with number nine overall, Radim Mirka. Your thoughts on him? What kind of timeline might he be under here to join the NHL? Maybe there's a stopover in Rochester. Your thoughts on Buffalo's first-round pick?
Well, the most important thing about Mirka is that if Matthew Schaefer didn't exist, he'd probably be the first defenseman off the board. So I'm not just saying that because he was the second defenseman off the board after Schaefer. I mean, he really was that good, and it really started way back the year prior in his draft minus one season. Like Schaefer, he had a great Ivan Hlinka tournament, and then he made the Czech extra league team, the A team, out of camp, I guess you want to call it camp, and he kind of like was a fish out of water in that. I felt like the jump from the U18 tournament level to the adult league was a little bit of a shock, but he wasn't who he really is, which is a very confident and assertive young man with the puck, without the puck. So I think the midseason switch to Seattle in the Dub really helped him out. You saw him kind of find his game again, so to speak, and he's the kind of defenseman that really could take over a game. He could do it with his physicality, he could do it with his skating, he could do it with his playmaking, his shot. He could create his own shot. So this is a high-end defensive player we're talking about. And if you look at the right side on the Sabres prospect depth chart, there's some soft-handed guys with quick feet, but not a guy that you'd think could put up a lot of points, Whereas I think now with Mirka there, he could be a top pairing guy. That's pretty much his ceiling, and that's a good thing when you have that right shot defenseman who you can match up against top lines because he gives you the size. He's got the quickness to keep up with forwards off the puck. So I had them going for Aitchison, Keshawn Aitchison, only because I felt that Mirka was going to be gone by nine. I thought he was going to go to Utah at four, and apparently the centers ruled the day. We kind of, in a way, expected that. So in a sense, you could say that this is a little bit of a steal for the Sabres at nine.
And it feels like they had a type going into the draft and even into free agency here. They trade for Kesterling, they trade for Connor Timmins, and then their second pick, another large right-shot defenseman in David Bedkowski. What can you tell us about him?
Well, I think this is my speculation. I think that the big defenseman that went early in the second round triggered the trade with Pittsburgh to acquire Timmins and Isaac Béliveau. So you got the righty in Timmins, the lefty in Béliveau, and they're okay. I think Timmins, as long as he stays healthy, he could be an NHL defenseman, whereas Béliveau was a little kind of blocked with Wilkes-Barre Scranton, so he saw time between the ECHL and the AHL. I really don't know what his ceiling is at this point. He's about 23. But I think when guys like Blake Fidler and Jacob Rombach and maybe even Amico went, these are big defensemen, two of them being righties. I think that's what triggered the trade. And I don't want to say that they settled with Bedkowski. It's just that Bedkowski wasn't as established as some of those guys. He was a pretty prominent figure in the trade between Oshawa and Owen Sound, with Oshawa drafting him, I believe, in the second round of the OHL draft. So he was pretty high profile. And then they packaged the million pieces together to get Colby Barlow, the Winnipeg Jets first rounder from 2 years ago, who was Owen Sound's team captain. So Bedkowski, in a way, was like the centerpiece going back to Owen Sound. They weren't a very good team this year, but he was the top pairing guy, you know, top penalty kill, matched up against the opposing top lines. He's got a physical element. He could drop the gloves, pretty quick feet. So I don't know if there's a lot of, let's say, offensive upside to his game, but he's actually a pretty smart defenseman. You think of these pugilists and these big body types as stay at home and lumbering, but to throw a name, a blast from the past, kind of like Mike Ramsey, where you're the guy who's going to block shots for you. He's going to, you know, clear out the front of the net. So you're happy with that, especially in the third round. So I thought that was a pretty good value pick for the Sabres.
Steve Corianos, our guest here, breaking down the NHL draft. As Steve, take a wider look here. Who had a good draft? Which teams did you think came away with some good things here?
Well, the Islanders. I mean, the Islanders, usually the way that I assess a draft, whether it's good or bad or average, is kind of like not just something how my rankings go, but how I just feel about the prospect. I'm really motivated by a certain player throughout the course of the draft season. I mean, the Islanders really, it was just one after the other. Now, they did have to trade Noah Dobson to acquire those two first-round picks that became Eklund and Aitchison. But those three picks by themselves is a home run for any team. And I guess contrary to popular belief, I actually like what Pittsburgh did. And I know Kyle Dubas, I've been very critical the way he's had his scouts draft in the past. Took a little bit of a gamble, I thought, on Ben Kinzel at 11th overall. But the rest of the draft, they took some pretty big swings for the with high skill guys, and I'm always a big fan of that. And then really the Boston Bruins, you come away with James Hagans at seven. You get high skill guys, which is what the Bruins really need, and Cooper Simpson, Will Moore, Cole Chandler. So I think that Yemelyanov, the Russian kid. So I think every team did well. I think every team went into this draft specifically looking for the size, for the grit, for those lunch pail types. Any added bonus you get with a finesse or a dual threat offensive weapon was a bonus. But most of the teams, I think, went for, it's like what Jerry Fortin said. You know, you watch the playoffs and you kind of want your team to look like that one day. Granted, it's probably going to be 6, 7, 8 years down the road if they're lucky to be as good as Florida. But, I don't really think any team had a bad draft, put it that way.
He's Steve Cornianos. You can follow him on X at the Draft Analyst. Steve, you mentioned Florida, and as the season was winding down and we see the Panthers hoist their second Stanley Cup in consecutive years, you know, a lot of chatter around what some perceive to be an advantage that Florida and or Tampa have being in that state. And I think a lot of hockey insiders dismiss that notion entirely. I wanted to get your take on that because there's a lot of people that would fight that just by saying, you know what, these are good teams, good organizations that have done a great job of drafting and developing their own players and working them up through the ranks to where they are, making smart decisions.
So I can look at it from both sides. So I definitely see the argument, right? It's not, I don't think it's a shock that a player would want to maximize his, let's say, salary in a tax-friendly state like Florida. And, oh, by the way, it's weather's favorable year-round, and now you have this kind of like a huge following now, but it still doesn't even compare to the big major cities where a lot of these guys could be anonymous. You know, you have football still number one in Florida. Baseball is pretty big down there as well. So I think the players like that. But at the same time, you have to wonder, like, when the players themselves, when they look at how the Lightning and how the Panthers have been built and they're being able to get these guys and use the, let's say, the fine print within the CBA to have cap flexibility around the trade deadline, all these things, and then also retaining them. I mean, it's going to be very – I think it's an easier sell to convince a pending free agent, one of your own, to stay for less money because of the – financial advantage that the state of Florida offers. I think a small little piece to it too might have been, it could only be temporary, that because of COVID and all the restrictions that went on in North America and Europe, Florida is one of the first states that said, well, we're going to be open for business. I think that might have appealed to some of the players who just wanted to play. So I think it's cyclical. Remember that Tampa and Florida used to be really bad. Florida especially, they could not fill that arena for anything. They made the playoffs, I think, twice in like an 8 or 9 year period. They couldn't get out of the first round when they did. And even this current group, management group, they couldn't get past the second round. They were struggling, even though they had great regular season. So it's more like, I think it was their turn. And now that they've established themselves as the premier team in the league, we'll see how long it lasts. I don't think it's going to last that long. The hunt is going to become the hunted, and it's going to be someone new coming up pretty soon.
So you have a podcast, and you really want to make money with it. Then you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. Check this out. We'll host your podcast for free. You just do your show. We'll use the power of Odyssey's massive expert sales team to place ads in your show and make you money. Does it get any easier than that? Nope. You stay in control of your show, and we help you bring in the money. Sounds like a dream partnership. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start earning more from your content today.
Wow, imagine that. Struggling to get past the second round here, or even getting into the playoffs. I mean, this is a record drought for the Buffalo Sabres. They and the Jets right now tied for the longest playoff drought in the four major sports. My question is, all right, I'm not going to tell anybody that this is going to be the year that Buffalo breaks it. Let's say they don't. Let's say it's another non-playoff season and they're going to be in the lottery again. Tell me a little bit about Gavin McKenna. Everybody's saying he's going to be the top pick in 2026. Are you buying in on the hype? McKenna, by the way, committing here to Penn State. Your thoughts on McKenna?
Well, he's a phenomenal prospect. I think we learned our lesson a little bit with Connor Bedard. Like, I was part of that, I guess, that hype machine, and Mitch Korb as well, where, you know, we saw Crosby and Ovechkin do wonderful things when they first came into the league. We saw McDavid do the same thing, whereas, you know, Bedard was phenomenal in his junior days with Regina, and he's kind of been, he's still very good, almost a 70-point player his first 2 years before turning 20. So I think we have to temper expectations with McKenna, okay? He's not the biggest guy. He might have to adjust. I think going to college in a very difficult physical conference like the Big Ten is going to be telling, because we saw James Hagans make that transition from junior to college, and the kid got killed, and he still averaged the point a game, and it hurt his draft stock. So do I see McKenna having like a Jack Eichel or a Paul Kariya or an Adam Fantilli type of freshman season in college? He should, because that's how skilled he is. But again, when teams want to tank or center their season or their draft strategy around this one player, I would say be careful with that, because even with the Bedard situation, we're seeing now that Mitch Corbin, Fantilli, and Carlson, maybe even a guy like Will Smith, these players have the potential to be equally good, I think, at least, so in the long term. So, but yeah, the hype is real. He basically, I don't think he carried Medicine Hat to the Memorial Cup. He was a big, pretty big reason why. But this year, you know, smaller finesse player playing in the you know, rough and tumble Big Ten, it's going to be, I think a lot's going to be revealed about his game, good or bad. But I think he's going to come out on top and still be the number one overall pick.
Steve, when you're breaking down prospects, do you continue to kind of follow along as they become pros? And I'm leading you into the season that we saw here firsthand in Rochester with Consta Hellenius. I wanted to get your scouting report of him coming into the pros, and if you had any insight into as to his first season here in North America.
Well, I loved Hellenius. I think I had him ranked fifth last year. To answer the first part of your question, I try not to, because there's a lot of, you know, hockey's got like 50,000 leagues you got to cover, and I'm just one dude, so it's a lot of work. I do keep tabs on it. I do watch the AHL on occasion, not as much as I used to, but Rochester has always been a team that I followed because I'm waiting for the Sabres to finally hit, and you know, I track them this year, and just listen. I don't mean to disparage anybody in Buffalo, but I kind of like watching Rochester play more than I like watching the Sabres.
Same.
And they were a heck of a team this year, and I think even Levi being back down there on a full-time basis is going to be good for him. I know he probably doesn't agree with that, but you have a lot of firepower down there before Hellenius showed up, and then the transition from the Finnish men's league to the AHL was pretty seamless. So I don't really know his timeline to making it to the NHL, because, like I said, the Sabres have guys down there that have paid their dues. This kid is just a brilliant playmaker. I mean, he's all doesn't matter what level he's at. So he's going to be playing at the World Junior Summer Showcase coming up in Minnesota. He's going to probably be, if the Sabres release him, he'll be playing for Team Finland at the World Juniors. But I love him. I really do. He's a guy that I'm kind of rooting for more than the average, let's say, 2024 prospect, because he was marginalized because of his size. And I'm like, no, this kid's brilliant. He's got a high IQ. He's got great vision. So outside of the adjustment to the rink size and the physicality, I think he's going to be fine. I mean, you're probably looking at maybe 2 years he'll be in the NHL.
Yeah, Danger, I just got to tell you, I was wrong when I was texting our guest here, Steve Corianos, because this was prior to free agency, everything kind of beginning, where I said, Steve, I'm looking forward to July 7th when we talk about the J.J. Paterka trade to the Rangers.
Oh, yeah.
To the Rangers.
Yeah. I'm sure the Rangers would have offered up more than whatever. Your thoughts on the – because that's kind of the buzz here. Like, wait, that's all – maybe we're wrong on this, but that's all Buffalo got back for J.J. Paterka, a guy who could be number two center in this league easily?
I get it. But here's the thing. It hasn't worked for a long time, so you have to take more chances. So I know that Adams is not a popular guy, but from an outsider's perspective, he really has nothing left to do but to go with, like – tough guys to play against. So although you could say, well, listen, it's definitely tough to play against a guy who's going to have a 70-point season, and that's the kind of player Paterka was. I had him in the first round, so when the Sabres got him, and we talked about it, I said I was very happy with the pick. However, if you didn't watch Kesselring play and you don't watch Josh Dome play, you're going to automatically defer to the stats and say, oh, whatever. I think they could have gotten more value, but I think it's more along the line. It went more along the line of, let's say, Adams' strategy, which is, you know, you're going to trade Mittelstadt for Byram. You're going to trade Savoy for McLeod. You're going to trade Cousins for, Norris. So some of these guys, they got knocked for their play off the puck. They weren't back-checking hard enough, and so they soon found their way out of Buffalo. I know there's also the history of players leaving Buffalo and becoming superstars, wearing a different uniform. But I think that the Sabres probably viewed it as, listen, we got Kulik, we have Rosen, we have Östlund, we have, you know, I don't think firepower really is a problem. If I recall correctly, they were like a top 15 team, better than average offense this year. And you go back 2 years when they were a really good offense. So I think the intent is to make life easy on the goalies. God bless Paterka. We love his skill, but he really didn't make life easy on his own goalies. And I'm saying it's his fault, just his style. So again, when you have a deep farm system, when you have all these assets, you could take a swing like that. But again, I would have definitely asked for something, you know, I guess with all due respect to Josh Stone, maybe something more. Because, you know, Utah has, they've had like 48 picks in the last 5 years heading into the Jets. It's not like he was the only thing they had available. But, you know, we'll just have to wait and see. A lot of pressure is going to be on Kesselring, though, and Doan to contribute. But, you know, when you have a 13-game winless streak in the middle of the season and Paterka's in the lineup, you have to ask yourself, well, what exactly do we have to fix here? And losing games to teams you should have beat, you know, maybe tighten up defensively, make life easier on the goalie. High danger chances, the Sabres were pretty bad at this year. So I think that's, again, I'm speculating, but that's just how I think they viewed the trade. But I, if you're a Sabres fan, you're upset about it. I totally understand.
I wonder, though, how much of this goes into it as well, Steve. And you know, NHL players, like any professional athlete, you want them to feel a part of the community. And if you don't want to be a part of what we're trying to build here, then we're not going to put a gun to your head. We're going to find value where we can and move on from you. Do you think Paterka, I mean, did Paterka make it almost like, well, we have to move on from him. He just don't want to be here.
It's possible, you know. I mean,
With Eichel talking about guys who, you know, have gone on to bigger and better things since leaving Buffalo.
But winning cures everything. So if, yes. I think if the Sabres were winning and you had that buzz back, like you had the same buzz that you had back in, let's say, 2007, or you had the same buzz you had in 99, like everyone wants to stay. They want to be a part of it. And I understand it's kind of a slippery slope when you are a losing team and you're trying to convince people to stay and be part of the solution. But, you know, it's like Bedkowski said in his interview, which I thought was pretty impressive for a young man, when he was asked, like, hey, like, is the situation in Buffalo, like, concern you at all, meaning the playoffs? He's like, no, nothing lasts forever, and he wants to be part of the solution. So maybe 5 years from now we could say, you know what, it worked out. It was for the best of the team. But I agree. If Paterka didn't want to be here, he was going to probably make that a point well into his, you know, you lock a guy up and now you have a no move clause. Then you're really running into problems there. So in a way, you could say maybe, possibly, that they avoided a bigger headache down the road.
All right, Steve, great stuff. We should do this more than once a year. Really appreciate you coming on today. Steve Corianos, the draft analyst. Tell everybody how they can get more of your work.
Just find me on Substack, the draft analyst, and that's pretty much it.
Well, Steve, we know that your work never ends. You're going to be looking at prospects for 2026 and beyond and tracking their growth and their development as they all look to become professionals. Appreciate you giving us some time and sharing your insight on the Sabres draft this year.
No problem, Gene. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
You got it. There he is, Steve Corianos, the draft analyst. Follow him on X at the Fan or at the draft analyst. You can also follow us at the Fan Rochester on X. He's right, man. There's so many leagues worldwide to actually, the job of an NHL prospect analyst is next level. You're Rain Man.
Yeah, like compare that to football, where college football Saturday and maybe the occasional Thursday or Friday game, where again, you're only dealing for one continent here. Like the idea that, like, you got to know something about the KHL, you got to know something about Sweden and Finland, and he's amazing. Should be working in a front office somewhere.
Yeah.
Now a few things that come out of that, like, that spark. Okay, what did everybody miss here while we were on summer vacation? One, the notion that Paterka was, hey, I don't want to be here, get me out of here. Paul Hamilton was adamant with us. He said, no, that when he talked to him, everything was on the up and up unless something changed. It might still be in there in the sound where Hamilton talked about how he thought this was agent driven specifically. Oh. He was saying this is the agent saying we need to get you somewhere else that's going to pay you accordingly.
Hmm. Okay.
We may not have it.
I don't, but that makes sense, and far be it from an agent to try and get value for their client and you know, pad a little bit of extra cake in his wallet as well.
Now, and then the other thing, and it was actually a guy that we had on our show years ago that brought this up originally. Hey, we're going into another, you know, exciting finish here to the Stanley Cup. Oh my gosh, Edmonton is going to, you know, not win it again. It was Steve Levy, not on our show, but somewhere else, talking about should the Oilers trade Connor McDavid? And
oh, here
now
we go.
All of a sudden, yeah. Do you realize Connor McDavid is going to be an unrestricted free agent next year?
Yeah.
Do you realize Jack Eichel is going to be an unrestricted free agent next year? Next year's going to be crazy.
Yeah.
And the idea, should the Oilers break this up, what do you do? What's the timeline? That is going to dominate everything. If they don't, like when we talked last hour to Joe Urin about Tuck not getting a contract, that'll be a distraction. Oh, no, no, no. The idea that Connor McDavid might go into this season without a long-term deal.
I don't know how you could even entertain the idea of trading the best player in the world. I know that it's happened before. It's not unprecedented. I know that it's happened before. And it, with the same team, ironically. But I just can't see why Edmonton would see value in moving on from Connor.
Yeah, the quick history lesson on that, it was an owner named Peter Pocklington who basically was busted. He had no money, and this was before like you had big TV money coming in, even to Canadian markets. He really had no choice. He was backed up against it. The Kings saw an opportunity. That's how the Gretzky trade happened. My gosh, how many years ago now? 30, more than that, right? 88. You don't have to do that with McDavid. The only reason McDavid might want to move is, well, all right, family or whatever. But we also had our guy, Dennis Bernstein, on. And this was right before. Dennis says, no, he's going to stay there long term. His wife just opened up a new bar there.
Like, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's nobody trying to woo him away from Edmonton.
So good. And the fact that he can't get over on Florida, that's a tough one. But it's going to make it when he does finally get one, and I think he will get one when it does finally happen. It's going to be sweet. Not that I wasn't really rooting for Florida, but you want to see the best player in the world hoisting the cup at some point.
But Florida, and I'm not a Florida fan, but don't you just admire how that team is gritty and how they're built and how they play at a different level in the postseason?
The thing that I love about Florida has a player who reminds me of the Blackhawks teams that I loved that won their three Stanley Cups. You know, Jonathan Toews was like the glue, the captain, the guy that held everything together. And it's very clear and apparent that Florida has that, and a guy that doesn't get the headlines. But Barkov is that guy. Barkov is the dude that just makes it all work. I know Tkachuk is a flashier name. We gravitate towards Reinhardt. Barkov is the glue. Barkov makes it all happen for that team. I love that player. One of my favorite players in the league. I just hate that he's playing for Florida and not somewhere else. What are you going to do? We got to get to happy hour next. We're back in the sports bar after our little hiatus, our summer holiday. As I heard, oh, you're on holiday. Oh, yes, you're on holiday. Oh, holiday. Not vacation, holiday. We're on holiday. We're back from holiday. We're gearing up for Buffalo Bills training camp just over 2 weeks from now. We have plenty of time for your calls if you want to join us during happy hour. The number is 866-4FAN, 585-866-4326.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. 95.7 FM and AM 950. The Fan, Rochester. So you have a podcast, and you really want to make money with it. Then you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. Check this out. We'll host your podcast for free. You just do your show. We'll use the power of Odyssey's massive expert sales team to place ads in your show and make you money. Does it get any easier than that? Nope. You stay in control of your show, and we help you bring in the money. Sounds like a dream partnership. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start earning more from your content today.